It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Thousands rallied at the National Mall over the weekend to mark the 50th anniversary of the historic March on Washington. That's when the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. delivered his iconic I Have a Dream speech on the National Mall as part of the August 28, 1963 March on Washington. A sizable contingent of Pittsburghers was at the commemoration, including Tim Stevens of the Black Political Empowerment Project. He joins us by phone with one of the young adults he brought along on a one-day round-trip bus excursion to the nation's capital, Monroe Johnston, a student at Community College of Allegheny County. Tim Stevens, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh.
Well, what's left of me? Yes, sir. I'm still in recuperation.
You crammed a lot into one day, down and back with all that happened in between.
Yeah.
And Monroe Johnston, good to have you with us.
Oh, it's good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Tim Stevens, leaders like yourself from civil rights, religious, and civic organizations paid tribute to those who fought and who continue to fight for racial equality. What is the state of those demands today?
Well, thanks for having us on, and I'm glad Monroe could join us, because Monroe represents what I want to see as one who's been in the fight for over four decades, is to have young adults take on a commitment to civil rights and to human rights and to equality. And there haven't been enough, in my opinion, and many others with me in my generation, of younger folks starting to take this on. So I thought it was important for him to be on the air today with us. And thanks, Monroe, for joining us. One of the sad things is that many of the issues that Dr. King spoke of 50 years ago, and all of those who were there, including Georgia Congressman John Lewis, who was able to be here again. I think he was the only one of that era who spoke, was able to speak this time. That many of the issues that were spoken of in 63 still remain key agenda items for those of us who believe in civil rights. The recent decision of the Supreme Court to help gut part of the 65 Voting Rights Act, which really was generated from the enthusiasm and power of the 63 March, and of course the eloquent speech of Dr. King, the 1964 Civil Rights Act, the 65 Voting Rights Act, both came out of to a large degree out of the energy of the movement of the 60s, and certainly the March on Washington was kind of the culmination of that energy and that focus of black people, white people, Hispanic people, people of all colors, all ages, all races. On our buses, we had from 9-year-olds to 87-year-olds. We had an 87-year-old, Ms. Cohen, the daughter of the mother of Claire Cohen, Dr. Claire Cohen here, and their family. They had several of their kids there. There was a three-generation picture, which was really great. And she was not at the rally in 63, but her father was, and the one in the wheelchair I'm talking about, the 87-year-old, and she wanted to be there, and she was in her wheelchair being pushed by her family and at times by Monroe, who's on the phone with us. And that was a statement into itself, that the issues that were being fought 50 years ago, some of them still need to be fought today. And one of the goals of the rally is to energize Congress to look at the Voting Rights Act that was somewhat torn apart by the Supreme Court by a 5-4 vote, ripping apart a decision of Congress, which was overwhelming in 1963 and again reinforced, I believe, in 96 in an overwhelming fashion. Some people talk about activist court. Well, in the opinion of some of us, this is an activist court to make a decision that overran what was a decision of 98-2 or 98-0 in the Senate in overwhelming numbers in the House.
Well, and let me jump in, Tim, because Al Sharpton said Saturday that there are going to be organized protests to demand a reinstatement of the provisions of the Voting Rights Act that were recently thrown out by the Supreme Court, that they are coming. What do you know about that?
Well, I don't have the specifics on that, but we'll be certainly listening. Celeste Taylor will help coordinate. We had three buses that we coordinated directly with through Black Political Empowerment Project, Celeste. We also had another bus from the we coordinated and worked with from Reverend Derek Tynes and the
Bayard Rustin.
Bayard Rustin Society.
Right.
We also had two buses left at midnight with Esther Bush and the Urban League, and we had three buses leaving at 3 in the morning with the United Steelworkers, including one bus that they contributed to the NACP, and then a Solo Dean bus. So we had 10 buses, and then a Northside bus. So we had 10 buses coming out of Pittsburgh, which was a significant statement out of Pittsburgh. And
Let me jump in and bring Marcus, Monroe Johnston into the conversation.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Marcus is your son.
Monroe
Johnston is a student at the Community College of Allegheny County who was with Tim Stevens, accompanied him and others from Pittsburgh to the commemoration of the 50th anniversary of the historic March on Washington. Monroe, what did you know about the March on Washington before this commemoration?
It was something that was a historical point in time. Dr. King and many other of our, you know, black leaders, and not just our black leaders, but even people from all races coming together and, you know, having a march on Washington for us to come together as people for a greater cause.
And 50 years later, as you ran into people who were at the first march 50 years ago, what was it like to meet some of them and hear their stories?
It was interesting to speak with people who have, you know, more experience, you know, throughout life, because you get around a lot of people who are my age, who are, you know, between ages of, 18 and 25, a lot of college students, a lot of young adults, and they realize that, you know, there is a problem in our society. They realize that, you know, there's an economical problem or there's a racial issue that may be taking place right now, but they don't really understand how us as people can control that situation, and it doesn't have to be a superficial, you know, stereotypical type of situation. It's a situation that we control as people, and we come together and we make a difference.
Monroe, have you gotten a sense of what was being talked about back in 1963 that you still think we're working on today?
It's a lot of things. It's not just a thing where, you know, it's one specific issue. It's the overall idea of how our government and how our country is looked at and how, you know, we portray ourselves to be. We can't say that we're, you know, we want to be so positive and we want to make a difference, but you only attend, you know, one event in D.C. and it's a big event, you know, about MLK and about the 50th anniversary, but it's bigger than just going to one event. It's about us, you know, each and every day putting the work in to become better people.
Tim Stevens. Go ahead, Tim.
It's, you know, the march itself, to a large degree, and you had speakers such as John Lewis, who's a living legend in politics, being a congressman who was at and spoke at the 63, and Jesse Jackson, and Ben Jealous, the national president, and the national president of the Urban League, Mark Muriel, and Reverend Lowry, who's a legend as well, and mother of Trayvon Martin, spoke, and of course, Reverend Sharpton did a fiery address. But the part of the importance, I think, of people being there and just packed in, I mean, we could hardly get through, was a statement to ourselves, kind of a reinforcement of our personal commitment to civil rights and human rights. You had people not only from the National Action Network, as I said, but the NACP, the Urban League, A. Philip Randolph, and the American Federation of State, County, Municipal Employees, American Federation of Teachers, United Latin American Citizens, the Gay and Lesbian Task Force, just a wide range of folks. And there are so many issues that are going on in society today. As I said, we talked about the Voting Rights Act happened to be gutted partially, ironically enough, 50 years after the march which is a sad time. And 50 years after Medgar Evers, a national leader of the NAACP back in those days, was assassinated because he had a commitment to register black people. So we have people dealing with those kind of laws. The Trayvon Martin was always in the air going into this, and there in D.C. you had a lot of Trayvon Martin signs. And the whole issue around stand your ground laws, which in the opinion of some of us, gives people in their mind a right to just shoot folks who they think may be suspicious and in their territory. Because let's be honest, some people think every black male is a criminal about to commit another crime. So if you went by that, anybody white with a gun who saw a black person close to their home may feel they have a right to shoot them. And those stand your ground laws, which led to the death of this teenager who had only just became 17 weeks before his death, I think it encouraged the great turnout, as well as the attack on the Voting Rights Act and these voter ID laws, which have been a couple of which I think I told you last time were enacted or enforced the day that the Supreme Court made the decision. Georgia and or Texas, I should say, in North Carolina immediately moved to enforce their new voter ID laws, which were considered to inhibit people from voting. Nobody with a straight face can tell me those laws are going to encourage voter turnout.
Right. There's a lot swirling.
There
was a lot that was being discussed before the commemorative event on Saturday, and there's a lot coming out of it. So with that event having taken place, and we're looking ahead to Wednesday as well,
right,
which is the actual 50th anniversary. So as you look at these important issues, how do you go about addressing them? For example, in Pennsylvania, when you talk about stand your ground, we have the Castle mm-hmm. Doctrine.
Yes.
What coming out of Saturday right. do you see bringing momentum toward a discussion of these issues and possibly a resolution?
Well, one thing, the ACLU and the statewide NAACP and the statewide League of Women Voters in Pennsylvania work together on the trying to stop this voter ID bill in Pennsylvania, which we think, again, will inhibit voting turnout of black people, of young people, of senior citizens, people who are in nursing homes and in hospitals. That my understanding from this weekend is that there is a hold on that now, that they have been asked for the November election, that they are no longer allowed to ask people for their voter ID. So there has been some progress on that fight, because the system has worked pretty well. Those who had been pushing the voter ID law in Pennsylvania had to admit there were no legal actions against anybody because they had no cases. So it was like a law running after something that didn't exist as a serious problem. You always find someone somewhere doing something wrong. But it was really not a problem in this state, and it's not really a problem. And most people are not going to go into a polling place saying, I'm Tim Stevens or whomever. I mean, you may not want to use me because I have some identity. But someone, just a regular person that most people don't know about, most people are not going to go in a polling place and say they're someone else. That's just a ridiculous thing to prevent people from voting. But to your action, we have a meeting every second Thursday at BPEP. At Hill House Association, where we meet, the Black Political Empowerment Project, we invite people to be part of our planning council. We have an interracial planning council. Some people may not know that because we are the Black Political Empowerment Project, but we have white partners who believe in what we believe in and seek to be our partners and have been strong partners. But we meet at 6 at Hill House, and we'll be there on September 12th. And one of the things we can talk about is a response in Monroe. I hope you can make that. I know you're trying to do well in college at CCAC, and we want you to do that. But we want to have input as to how we can move the agenda from our energy out of D.C. to attack some of these issues that confront us on a regular and daily basis.
And I want to – we need to take a break, but when we return, I want to ask Monroe Johnston, as one of the young people who attended the event on Saturday, about the opportunities he sees for himself to address – those problems, the ones that you discussed, Tim, and for his contemporaries to get involved in addressing issues of inequality. We're talking about...
That's an important question.
Indeed it is, and we'll explore that question when we return as we continue our conversation with Tim Stevens of the Black Political Empowerment Project and also Monroe Johnston, a student at Community College of Allegheny County. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Thousands rallying at the National Mall over the weekend to mark the 50th anniversary of the historic March on Washington, which included Martin Luther King Jr.'s iconic I Have a Dream speech on the National Mall as part of the August 28th, 1963 March on Washington. There will be a commemoration on the actual day, on the actual anniversary, Wednesday, but last Saturday, thousands went to Washington to recreate the March on Washington, to commemorate it, and talk about issues going forward, including Tim Stevens of the Black Political Empowerment Project, and also a college student from Pittsburgh, among other students, Monroe Johnston, who is at Community College of Allegheny County, studying there. And shortly, we are going to bring in another of our scheduled guests today who was at the actual event in 1963, Dr. Nelson Harrison, a clinical psychologist and Pittsburgh-based musician. We'll get to him shortly. But Monroe Johnston, before we wrap up with you, as we went to break, I mentioned the question I wanted to pose to you, which is, what opportunities do you see for yourself to address the problems that have been talked about for the last 50 years that many feel have still not yet been resolved today?
I believe it's a huge opportunity for, you know, my peers, people around my age. You know, they may think that we have all the time in the world. We really don't, you know, but we're still young and we still have, you know, a good amount of time to make a change on what's going on. And I really believe it's, you know, it's a lot bigger than, you know, any stereotype or any type of system that may be put in place. I believe that everybody who is around my age, you know, between, like I said, between 18 and 25, even older, we all have that opportunity to get together and make a difference together. You know, it's not something that one person can do, and it takes a lot of effort, you know.
Well, certainly you are part of that effort, and Monroe, we want to thank you for being with us. We are going to let you go and eventually bring in Dr. Nelson Harrison here to join the conversation with Tim Stevens. Again, Monroe Johnston, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Monroe, and I hope that you will spread the word to the young folks as to just the atmosphere in D.C., just the energy of being there and seeing all these people with that kind of commitment to come out. And some people went hundreds of miles. We went, you know, a couple hundred, but some people reading a newspaper from North Carolina who happened to be from the Pittsburgh area originally coming in years ago saying that people could not even get food in most of the places on the way from North Carolina to get to D.C. or get hotels, got into hotels, which now is certainly progress has been made in those arenas, certainly.
Thank you.
Work to do.
Thank you again, Monroe Johnston, and good luck to you at Community College of Allegheny County. Tim Stevens, before we bring in Dr. Harrison, I wanted to ask you about the coming out of the events of Saturday. As you look forward, I know that there are things that you want to do to try to bring young people into the conversation and to try to make them aware of the opportunities to address problems that have been identified certainly before Saturday, but with ongoing conversations about those. What are some of the things that you see happening in Pittsburgh?
Well, at our last BPEP meeting, Black Political Empowerment Project meetings, I said we meet every second Thursday at 6 at Hill House, we had a couple young ladies from a movement around the Trayvon Martin decision. And these are young ladies in their 30s. And when many of them were in City Hall, when they just sat down in the lobby of the fifth floor of City Hall, hoping and waiting for the mayor to come out to speak to the agenda items that they had created as a response to the Trayvon Martin verdict, they looked at a more global picture of issues that affect certainly the African-American community in Pittsburgh and beyond. And they came and shared with us their list of what they call demands to the city and the county and to those in power. And we took about an hour, I think, of our meeting to review them. And one of the things I said to the Planning Council, we want to literally go through their list and give them the time to explain, and we respond. Because one of the things that I want to do as chairman of BPEP and as a longtime civil rights activist is to encourage that kind of commitment and energy that they showed by creating a new movement in Pittsburgh, the Trayvon Martin Pittsburgh, And when I was down there with them in council for a while in the hallway a few weeks ago, I commended them. It was an interracial group of young people who were making their statements to the city leaders. A couple of councilmen members did speak to them. Council President Harris and Council Member Bruce Krause did come out. I believe Mr. Peduto came down a little bit later in the day. And they were trying to present their requests and demands to the mayor, who did not come out, but some of them went to his home later the next morning and delivered them. And I was asked by Channel 11 News, how did I respond to that? And I said, well, was anything broken? They said, no. I said, well, I called it aggressive activism. And the mayor did have an opportunity to come out and speak, and they would have avoided that. But what I did see was an activism of young people that I've been looking for. And so there is a beginning of that, and other folks have been taking a lead. The One Hood that was created a few years ago in response to some of the violence, those were young adult black males. So there is some progress in this area of young people and young adults getting involved and taking some leadership.
And that's certainly good to hear, Tim Stevens. And I want to take the opportunity right now to bring in Dr. Nelson Harrison, a clinical psychologist.
He's much older than me, you know.
Uh-oh.
Nelson and I go back probably at least four decades, right, Nelson?
Hi, Dr. Harrison.
Hi.
How are you? Again, Dr. Harrison is a clinical psychologist, Pittsburgh-based musician who played in the Count Basie Orchestra, and he was at the march in 1963 and spoke at the Bayard Rustin Civil Rights Summer Camp before they headed off to the commemorative march on Washington over the weekend. Dr. Harrison joining us by phone, and you were 22 at the time of the march. And frat brothers with Jesse Jackson. You spent that day in Washington with Jesse Jackson. What convinced you, Dr. Harrison, that you had to be there?
Oh, well, you didn't need convincing. We were very active on the Pitts campus as an ACP chapter. And we were picketing around Pittsburgh. We picketed Woolworth. We picketed Duquesne Light. We picketed a lot of the places that you couldn't sit at the counter or you couldn't work there. So we were very active on campus as a civil rights group. So we actually helped organize the Pittsburgh group that went.
And as you reflect on that day in 1963 at the Lincoln Memorial, what are the thoughts and the images that immediately come to mind?
Well, what immediately comes to mind is I wish I had a camera. Because we didn't have cameras in those days. Nobody even thought about it. But we didn't think about it in terms of making history. We thought about it in terms of it was just an important place to be, to just be a part of something that was a growing. You could feel the energy locally and nationally when people were beginning to see the injustices of the segregated system and what was happening in the South. With the sit-ins, and, you know, we were very fired up about that, and we wanted to be counted, so we had a chance to go, and we went.
Attorney General Eric Holder credited Martin Luther King's famous words for providing a foundation for the progress of the civil rights movement. The Attorney General made those remarks on Saturday. Is that how you see it, Dr. Harrison?
He certainly emerged as the recognized leader, although the march was a grassroots movement that was going to happen whether he was involved or not. He and the other designated leaders were projected as the leaders after the movement had grown to the point where they knew there was going to be a whole bunch of people in Washington, D.C. It was sort of, I guess that was the closest to a pre-organization of it. Otherwise, it was just going to be a whole bunch of people showing up in Washington, D.C. with no particular agenda except to be counted with our signs and whatever, you know, like sort of like the Occupy movement did recently, just to show up and hold up signs and let the powers that be know what we thought. But somehow they got together with President Kennedy and decided that they were going to choose certain people to speak and organize it as a leader-led movement, which, like I said, it wasn't originally that. So I think Dr. King was on last, and it was 103 degrees that day. So we were out there so long that we didn't even stay long enough to hear the speech live. We went to one of the Frat Brothers' apartment a couple blocks away, and he said, "Hey, I got some Cokes and some beers over there. Why don't we go over there? It's cool, and we can watch the rest of the march on TV," which we did. There were six of us, Jesse being one of them, Callan Morris was another. I can't remember all the names. One of the guys' name was Talaferro, but I can't remember all the names. But we had all met the year before in D.C. at a fraternity conference. That's where I first met Jesse. He was running for national fraternity office and put together a little campaign committee, and I was one of the six guys on that committee. So we hung out for about 3 days the year before. So when we got down there, we had two train cars coming from Pittsburgh. And when we joined the queue, about a block and a half in front of us, I saw nothing but purple and gold, which are frat colors because our national headquarters is in D.C. And so I said to the Pittsburgh people, I said, "I'll see you later. I'm going up with the frat." And that's why I got up there, and then I ran into some of the guys I knew, Jesse being one of them, and we just hung out that day.
How did your experience, Dr. Harrison, at the march 50 years ago shape the adult you developed into?
Not much. It actually got me off the picket lines. That was my last picket line. I come from three generations of civil rights fighters. So fighting the fight goes to my grandparents. My maternal grandparents came here in 1923 from Alabama. My grandmother had a bachelor's degree at age 18 in Alabama and taught at Alabama Normal School, which became Alabama State College. And my grandfather, they were both teachers. So they came to Pittsburgh in 23 and went to the school board to see about teaching. And, of course, they never heard of black teachers. So my grandmother was very active in the NAACP. And in 1934, she became the first state president of the NAACP conference. She, from that position of political power, she assisted Judge Homer Brown in getting elected to the state legislature as the first black in the Pennsylvania legislature, you know, using the NAACP lawyers and her reach from that position. She also assisted Judge Brown in getting elected to the school board as the first black on the Pittsburgh school board. And he fought for black teachers as a from that position. In 1946, they finally decided to hire six black teachers, and Judge Brown gave my grandmother the honor of naming the first six black teachers in Pittsburgh. Her name was Sophie Bailey Nelson, and she picked the first six black teachers in Pittsburgh. Lawrence Peeler was one of them. Gertrude Wade, who just died a couple years ago, was the last one of them alive. I don't have all the other names, but I have to get them from my cousin.
Well, we've just about come to time, but in 30 seconds.
So, what I'm saying is civil rights was just a natural thing for me. So the march didn't change me at all. And I actually saw where I didn't see where too much was going to change, because the resistance was, we were so aware of the resistance against the march that I said to my mother's sister, who's still living at 95, the English professor down in West Virginia, Sophie Nelson Jr., I said it only took them 50 years to try to reverse the Voting Rights Act and try to repeal the civil rights legislation, which is what's happening now. I mean, we see it every day. I'm not surprised at that at all, because I saw that that was where the energy was going to go. The question was, how much could the progress that was seemingly happening, how long could that last? Because the racism didn't give up. It just outlasted us, that's all. So I don't see a lot of progress, and I don't see a lot of change. It looks a little different on the surface, but, you know, we're still walking against the wind and climbing up hills, and, you know, we have more discrimination now in a lot of ways, 50% unemployment in the black community among black males. We have segregated schools more than we did even when I was in school. So what is progress? We'd have to define it some kind of way that would seem to me to, I don't see it as progress. I see it as the same thing in a different form.
Dr. Nelson Harrison is a clinical psychologist and Pittsburgh-based musician. He, of course, played in the Count Basie Orchestra, and he was at the March on Washington in 1963. Dr. Harrison, I want to thank you so much for being with us. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you very much, Mark.
And also thanks to Tim Stevens of the Black Political Empowerment Project for joining us as well. Coming up, a winning season by the Pirates has fans dusting off the old rally cries. We'll hear about the history of sports songs in the Steel City. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.